Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams, touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Joined once again by the full crew. Start with my man, QB1. What's going on, JR?
What's going on, man? Happy to be back with everybody and ready to discuss some interesting topics we got going on tonight.
Yes, sir. We definitely got some fun topics to get into tonight. And, you know, your partner in crime from the Climbing the Big Board podcast, Miles. What's going on, my man?
I've been sick. Last couple of days, probably getting the ball from Yinka on Monday probably did me in.
And moving along to the man, the myth, the Saxy Prince, Saxy Leftwich. What's good, man?
I'm doing good, y'all. just getting in some.
How's Jacksonville? You know, how's Jacksonville going?
It's good, man. It's warm. It's warm at this time of the season. climatize myself to my teammates, and they seem to like me, so think I have a lot to bring to the table.
And with that said, you know, we this is something we have to talk about. I know it's from your other podcast, but we got to talk about this. Obviously, we had episode one, Climbing the Big Board podcast with Miles and JR, breaking down some draft prospects, and some footage of Saxy Prince hit Twitter a little bit earlier in the week. And so, you know, they took the breakdown into the podcast and did some best fits for him in the league. And did y'all really have my man? Did y'all really hit him with a Blake Bortles comp on the podcast? JR, is that really what we do to the Saxy Prince?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Yinka has to be on a team that is not very pass dependent, that can a running back that can carry them, which is Leonard Fournette. And a team that has a strong defense, which the Jaguars have, and I think Yinka would be a perfect fit there. Not asking him to throw the ball a lot, 15 times at the most. Otherwise, just turn around and let Leonard run, let Leonard eat, give it to him. So I think he's best on a team that isn't very pass-oriented, that is very run-dominant, just because, you know, he's young, doesn't really have the arm talent right now. He just needs some time to develop. And while he's developing, we just gonna ride Leonard's back.
Black Bortles and Miles, man. I mean, you know, y'all were a bit rough with the scouting report of my man there. I mean, what's that all about?
I gave him a better team option, at least in terms of run game. I gave him DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. So he literally only needs to throw the ball like 10 times a game and complete at least half on third down. And if you have to, maybe a touchdown. Just don't turn the ball over. That's all I said, you know. I gave him a good option in Tennessee.
Okay.
His scouting report, like JR said, just it's a work in progress. He's getting there. He's working on it. He's thrown at fences as often as he can. And every time he the ball sticks to the fence, it's a win for him. So.
All right, but on a serious note, we'll stop messing with QB2 here. There were a couple points that came up on the Climbing the Big Board podcast that I thought were really interesting. And the first thing there is I wanted to get like kind of a recap from both of you here. Start with JR, I guess. Can you give a little bit more specifics in terms of, and JR, I guess you can maybe keep it specific to quarterback. Like, what's your process? Because I feel like when on the question that you guys took from Twitter when you were kind of answering about your scouting process, it almost seemed like you were trying to answer across all positions at once. So given that, you know, JR, we really go to you for QB stuff more than anything, I guess, could you really break down for us how you do it and what you're looking for when you're trying to scout a quarterback?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's hard to explain, and people have their various different processes. Mine specifically with quarterbacks, I start from the ground up when I'm evaluating them. So the first thing I start with is their footwork. How are they within the pocket? How are they within the structure of the offense? Is their body always in positions to make throws? And how is their throwing mechanics? Are their feet always or their toe pointing to where they're trying to throw the ball? Or are they just always off platform and they look chaotic in the pocket? So the first thing I start with is their footwork, because I think that's one of the things that's most important. for a quarterback to have, which is proper mechanics, starting from the ground up. So the next thing I start with is their torso. Are they following through on their throws, or do they leave, you know, things to be desired? And what I mean by that is, do they have a lot of velocity behind their throws, and what is the reason that they do or that they don't? And the next thing I go to is their throwing motion. Is it tight? Is it compact? Or do they have an elongated release? And the last thing, which is probably one of the most important things, is, you know, their mind. Where are they psychologically? How can they mentally process what's going on in front of him? Can they go through progressions? Can they see coverages? Can they see what's going on before things happen? Can they see their hot reads on blitzes? So there's a lot of things that go into it, and those are just the main things that I look for.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that really goes along with something that Miles actually said that really got me thinking about thinking differently, I guess, in terms of, you know, the way people usually talk about wide receiver evaluation. So, Miles, I wanted you to get into that a little bit here, where you were talking about really thinking about things and really trying to break down, you know, that person's responsibility in the scheme and really understanding what they're supposed to be doing before you really drill down and start looking at the traits and the production and things like that. So I guess, could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. So I know, I obviously, you know, receiver is my position. So it's kind of one of those, it's a little easier for me to kind of have an understanding of what kind of, for me to expect, what I expect and what I see just based off of the knowledge I know I have. But personally, honestly, like there's a, I know when I was going through, especially in college, you know, you're going through that first year in a new system and a brand new offense, and you're still trying to understand yourself. And, you know, they have you play in a position. And so all your main focus and your main, like, thought is to worry about that position and to worry about, you know, your routes and your responsibilities. But as, you know, the older I got and the more I grew within that system and that offense and my understanding of everything, it definitely helped. Because you started to learn everybody else's responsibilities and roles, you started to finally like understand the entire scheme, not just your solo responsibility. And so once I understood the overall like scheme and other people's responsibilities, it helped me understand why everything was going on, why I'm running a clear out route for somebody running an over route on the opposite side of the field, and other things like that. And like, it just definitely helped me play at a, you know, helps you play at a faster speed once you have that full understanding of your responsibility, but along with everybody else on, at least, you know, everybody else's responsibility on the offensive side of the ball. Because if you have that understanding, then it helps you play faster. It helps you play a little more like, you don't have to think as much. You can just, you know, go out there and just ball. So I like to try to help, at least, you know, it's a little harder, you know, when you don't know the plays, you don't know some of the calls, you know, at the line of scrimmage and all that, but on film, you can at least tell based off some of the route concepts if, you know, if a guy's doing something right. If, you know, like I'd mentioned, like a guy running a clear out on, you know, let's say you're lined up out wide left and you have a guy in the slot on the backside on the other side of the field, and he runs an over route to the other side of the field where that guy is on the left. That guy running the clear out, you know, you can understand why he'd run a clear out there, because he's trying to open up space for the guy coming across the field. And you kind of use that as like a, okay, he might not be the main focus in that, you know, in that by the reads by the quarterback. And then once you kind of understand some of that stuff, you know, I try to watch at least one or two games of that, of a receiver, and to kind of try to understand their offense a little bit. And then I start going back and I try to read and figure out kind of what they did in that. And then that's where the production comes in, Jason, where you talked about and the production, the stats, the overall routes and all that kind of stuff, that it kind of comes after that for me.
Yeah, that's an awesome breakdown. And then I guess really the next thing, because we are talking about wide receivers, one of the things I just found, I guess a little, I don't know if it's ironic is the right word, but one of the things that I did find interesting while I was listening to the pod is that the wide receivers that you both, you know, seem to like a lot, or your rises or draft crushes at the wide receiver position, pretty much across the board, they were all, you know, analytics darlings that, you know, sites that I look into from, you know, an analytics perspective really had kind of identified these guys as players to watch, as players who, you know, were kind of on the upswing. And it kind of took me to a question that JR brought up, or something that JR brought up in terms of sample size. You know, one of the reasons I like analytics is that, you know, when you're looking at stats, you can potentially get, you know, a picture of a person's entire career. But from a scouting perspective, watching, you know, every single snap of a player's career could be something that is, you know, daunting. And, you know, if you're trying to put a spreadsheet together like JR is, I imagine, you know, might just very well be impossible from just a time perspective. So, JR, I'll start with you, I guess. You know, how many games do you typically need, or how many snaps of a player do you feel like you need to see in order to develop that sample size that you feel comfortable with your evaluation on them?
I think 4 to 5 is usually the limit that I like to use, because once you overload, you kind of start second guessing your evaluation, or you start forming some more conclusions that you didn't have before about a player. And sometimes it's just dependent upon the position. Now, me personally, I like to watch every game that a quarterback has played, just because there's certain situations or variables that might occur in that game that you want to see that you might not find in other games. Like, for instance, how they play in late game situations, or how they're playing against lower tier opponents, or how they're playing on the road. So there's different variables with quarterbacks as opposed to other positions.
And Miles, how about yourself? Because I know that, I mean, your process really sounds, you know, involved in terms of you're really getting in there and understanding the scheme and what everyone's supposed to be doing. So it sounds like that might take you a little bit longer per game. Like, how many games are you getting in when you're breaking down a wide receiver before you feel like you have a good feel for him?
Yeah, some of the guys, you know, I don't really have as much access to some of the video and stuff like that. So I use like a website like Draft Breakdown that really is really beneficial. So, you know, the guys you really want to watch, sometimes you only have a few games. So some guys you really only get, you know, a few game sample size. But I, like JR said, I kind of like to get more of the 4 to 5 range. And then if I can get that, then I can go back and at least rewatch a few of them. I especially like to watch, you know, their progressions. I know JR and I talked about this, but like a guy, you know, if he played his freshman year, I like to watch, know how things were his freshman year and how he improved to his sophomore year, into his junior year, and you know, if he goes senior year, then into that too. So probably 4 to 5 games is probably a good limit.
Well, that is awesome, gentlemen, and I don't want to take up too much of this time going too far down the rabbit hole of the climbing the big board stuff. It really was a great first episode. Looking forward to following all the future ones. But those were just a couple things that I heard while listening, that, you know, I figure I have you guys in the pod the next day, might as well bring them up and ask some of those questions. But moving along here, Yanka decided to have a little bit of fun today. You know, our man Teddy Bridgewater had his press conference, and you know, there were some fun pictures put up on Twitter today. And I think the one that that got most people talking was Teddy looking at some reporters and smiling with looks to be Chris Thomason in the back, looking less than enthused. Either that something happened, or just to be where he was, or maybe the camera just caught him at the wrong time. But, you know, Saxy Prince put out a caption this contest, and you picked your top three. So, Yinka, I will turn the stage over to you to run us through your top three favorites from the caption this contest you threw up on Twitter today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had probably anywhere from about probably 50 submissions. It was great. There's a lot of different ones. One of my top three was from Georgette, at J3D1K. You know, her caption was, "When does the McRib come back?" I don't know if anybody who's a huge fan of the McRib or whatnot, but there was a lot of huge hype around that sandwich. So I saw it and I started laughing. Yeah, I saw it and I just couldn't help but laughing, because I actually had an experience with a guy. I was driving through the window with some of my friends, and we get to the order the food, and the guy's just like, "Are you ready for the McRib?" And we're just like, "Excuse me, sir, what?" And he's like, "Are you ready for the McRib?" And I was just like, I just wanted a small fry or something, man.
Did you get the McRib though?
I did not get the McRib.
I mean, you need to get that McRib in your life, Yika.
I know, right? So then my second one comes from Richard Sickles, at Rich Sickles. He captions it as, "Keith, I've seen that video. Yinka's coming for that starting job." Now, I couldn't turn that away because I thought it was hilarious. Twitter has been having quite a fun time roasting me, which I'm perfectly okay with. I mean, with all like the tension of, you know, when's Teddy gonna start and Sam and stuff. You know, if Twitter has to come together to have a laugh and it's at my expense, I'll take it because it brings people together. So I like that one. Submission, final winner, comes from one of our very own, Mr. JR. He quote tweeted and he writes, when you finally meet the guy she tells you not to worry about. And I just thought that that was like so relevant to, I know, this season and, you know, some of that, you know, that hype on stuff. And I just had to give JR a shout out. So, yeah, shout out to everybody who submitted. Probably going to do some more caption contests, little things. If you guys, all the winners, if you guys can just like shoot me a DM. Yeah, there should be a little prize in store for you. For you guys, so yeah.
Yinka's DMs are always open too. So
always open. They so if he's
always open. They're always open. Always.
So without derailing things so far, JR Miles, where y'all at on the McRib? Like, are you lining up when it comes out?
Never had it before.
I've never had one either.
Oh man,
it's not bad. Honestly, if you. I think you just need to try it one time. It doesn't come around as often, but when it comes around, you have to get it.
Why though?
Because it's just one. Ooh, dot. It's just one of those things.
I know exactly what you're.
It's one of those.
That's the funny part. Is this throw? It's one of those things. But
where it's just one of those things where, like, you know, there's so much. It's like the Shamrock Shake. You know, there's so much hype around it. And
but there's like,
you
know, at least a reason to like a Shamrock Shake. Like, why do I need to like the McRib?
The McRib isn't terrible. Like, it's
not
real. I think it's
not,
good
it's
enough.
Not like real
it's,
ribs.
It's really not good.
It is not. It's not at it's all. Really not but
that's
but,
exactly you know, why I don't need to try.
But they really want us. They really want us to love it. But anyway, moving on along before we get derailed right. Talking fast food and you know regional food up in Minnesota that JR and I know nothing about. Vikings got a game this week. And it seems to be a game that most in the fan base are pretty much just penciling in as a win for the Vikings. Play Baltimore. And, Baltimore has not been a great team. Their offense looks horrible. They might not have but two receivers on the roster that were actually on the team last week who are healthy. But they do still have a pretty strong defense. And so I guess, JR, I'll start with you because I know I was, you know, giving you a little bit of grief today online about it. But I guess what are your thoughts on this game, this matchup, and is this a trap game for the Vikings?
Prince, dime.
Tyreek Hill, baby.
That was a dog, man.
Fantasy point. Somebody has stolen the old Alex Smith and replaced the new one. New and improved Alex Smith.
I did because I knew I needed him to perform on my fantasy team.
But anyway, I think this is a tough matchup for the Vikings offense just because I really respect the Ravens defense. Yes, they're 30th in the league against the run, but they've been missing their star nose tackle and Brandon Williams. He's returned to practice this week, so and he's an instant impact player. It's going to be a tough matchup for Pat Elflein. Brandon Williams is an exceptional talent. And they have good players at all three levels of their defense. They have Brandon Williams, Terrell Suggs, of course. Matt Judon is a good player. And they have C.J. Mosley in the middle as well on the back end with Jimmy Smith and Eric Weddle. So they have good players on all three levels of their defense. So I think it's going to be a tough matchup for the Vikings offense. But the Vikings defense, I think this is one of those games where they can really take over this game and – maybe like put a crutch on the offense. And what I mean by that is they can score a couple touchdowns and win this game because I think that's what it's going to take. I think the Vikings offense is going to struggle against this Ravens defense because I think they're really good. And this is one of those situations where I think the Vikings defense or special teams is going to have to score a touchdown for them to win this game. But I think they can really get to Joe Flacco just because he's really struggling this year. He only has 4 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. And he's really been struggling this year, just processing things that's going on in front of him. So I'm not worried about the Vikings defense. I'm never worried about the Vikings defense. But the offense kind of scares me just because Diggs is banged up. We don't know if he's going to play this week. And if they shut down Thielen, I don't really know where they're going to go. And, you know, I like McKinnon. And we all know what Murray is at this point, but if they are able to shut down Thielen, I got some questions as to where what the plan will be and what they will go to in order to score points.
Yeah, and Miles, what about you, man? What are your thoughts about this matchup and going in, and what are your expectations? I think we all pretty much unanimously agree that the defense should have no problems going there and taking care of business against the Ravens. But I guess, what are your thoughts on things overall and what we're going to be able to do offensively to score some points against this team?
Yeah, like you said, defensively, it should be no worry. We're at home, especially having that home field advantage. That there shouldn't be a problem there. Joe Flacco's prone to throwing, you know, interceptions and turning the ball over. But offensively, I definitely think it's going to have to be the Jerick McKinnon show, just because he's, in terms of your running back, he's the most electric running back you have, one of the most electric, you know, offensive players that they have on the team. So they're going to have to use him quite a bit and get creative with him. And I know Shermer's done a really good job of, you know, setting up the screen plays with Jerick and not using him as just an outside runner, but, you know, running him up the middle, even if it's not as successful as you'd like it to be. I don't know the numbers in front of me, but even if it's not quite as successful as you want it to be, because then it still sets up different opportunities to get creative with him, and you're not using him as, like, you know, just a passing down guy or just an outside runner or anything like that. So I like what Shermer's doing there. If Diggs can't go, the Ravens defense is definitely going to have to, you know, shut down a guy like Adam Thielen, because that's where the pass game will run through, you know, especially if Diggs is out. So, you know, you're going to have to have guys like Kyle Rudolph, Laquan Treadwell step up, and Jarius Wright's another one who will, you know, play a lot more snaps if Diggs doesn't go. And a guy we saw on Sunday who was activated for, I think, the second or third time this season, yeah, I think he got one target, but he played. It wasn't a lot of snaps, but he played more than I expected him to. But Stacy Coley, he could be a guy that could be an impact guy, because he's the kind of guy who's, you know, good after the catch, has good speed. He might be able to get downfield and stuff like that. So he could be a surprise guy that they're trying to get in the mix a little bit if Diggs doesn't go, and a guy that could, you know, get downfield and maybe catch a deep pass or something like that. So that could be one of those little wrinkles that, you know, that people aren't expecting that we could see on Sunday that I think could be really cool. But other than that, yeah, I think Rudolph and Treadwell are your top two guys if Floyd and Diggs are out this week, because they're going to have to step up, because they're going to be the second and third options in the pass game.
Yep, and to the point that you just raised there, not necessarily McKinnon specifically, but just looking at the Vikings overall on Sharp Football Stats, right now they're ranked 21st in run success rate, and they're ranked 6th overall in passing success rate, which really is what makes it such an intriguing matchup in my view, because when you look at how they match up with the Ravens defense, from a success rate standpoint is 2nd overall and 12th from a run perspective. So it really is one of those matchups where, you know, where we're good, you know, just looking at success rate anyway, it looks like they're slightly better. And then, you know, where we think we might have to turn to try to win this game, which is in the run game, they still look a little bit better from a success rate standpoint as well. So that's really going to be one of those things that's interesting to see, and interesting to see what they do from a matchup perspective with our offense versus their defense. Prince, one of the other things that's been talked about a little bit with this matchup, especially with the Ravens being down all their wide receivers, it seems, I guess, do we have any concerns that they might try to copy the game plan that Indianapolis used against us last year, where they just went with a bunch of tight ends and tried to expose our linebackers in coverage?
I mean, I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, that's one of the things that I get fearful the most. I don't really see guys like, you know, if they have to play. I don't really like Anthony Barr as much in coverage. I think it's been very clear as the season has progressed that the more that we can just let him loose close to the line of scrimmage, you know, the better that we get. But obviously that leaves Eric Kendricks, who's not the biggest linebacker, against, you know, some of the bigger tight ends that are in this league. A former Gopher, Max Williams, he's actually a Raven, so I'm not sure if he's going to get very much tick. But I do worry about our linebackers matching up. This might be a game where Emmanuel Lemur or
Potentially Ben Gideon gets a little bit more play. But I just don't want to see, you know, Mac Alexander having to cover, you know, bigger tight end and whatnot. So they could definitely expose us that way. I think that our DBs match up pretty well versus them. But that would be the first place I would look to exploit us. Yeah.
To that point, Jason, do you think the Ravens tight ends compared to the Colts tight ends from last year, do you see that as like more of a favorable matchup? I'm not favorable matchup, but like they have better tight ends. The Ravens, do you think the Ravens have better tight ends than the Colts did last year? Because I don't know if I feel that way. I agree with what they could potentially try to do, but do you think, I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I mean, I don't know what I'm thinking about. They killed us with Eric Swope last year. Swoop, or never know how to pronounce that name properly.
It was like one or two.
Yeah. It was really a couple big plays, but they have Ben Watson, who's old, but is, you know, was pretty athletic in his prime and is still, you know, being a productive player. They have, you know, Williams as Prince said, and it looks like the other tight end that they run out there is Nick Boyle. I'm not really worried about him being a matchup problem, but they have tight ends who have, you know, a measure of athleticism and coverage for, you know, two out of our three kind of base linebackers. So Gideon and Barr is something that has been a concern. So, Jack Doyle, he's nothing special in Indy. So that was the only reason that was something that I was a little bit, not necessarily concerned, but just wondering if maybe that was a way that the Ravens might go to try to exploit the defense versus trying to spread us out, because that really seems to be where we excel. And that led me to a question that I had for JR about that. I guess if the Ravens were going to try to kind of go with that heavy look and take advantage of our linebackers, what might be a way that Mike Zimmer would counteract that after seeing his defense exploited by a look like that last year?
What he would probably do, it's really tough to say. What he could probably do is he can interchange Harrison Smith, Sandejo, Gideon and Lemur, just to get somebody more athletic at those spots. Yes, you're giving up some weight at the linebacker spot, interchanging it with the safety, but you get a more athletic guy to where they can't take advantage of you down those seams where the Colts were killing them last year with those, you know, dink and dunk throws down the seam and vertical throws down the seam with their tight end. So maybe interchanging those four guys, and instead of being in such a heavy, heavy package, even though they are two tight end sets.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense there. And I guess, you know, you mentioned, Brandon Williams is a player that we definitely need to watch and someone who's going to test Pat Elflein there. I guess, did you have any other players maybe on the offensive side of the ball? Because it seems like we're really just overlooking the Ravens offense completely. Like, that, you know, really every conversation that we've had has been about the defense. But I guess, are there any players that you see on the offensive side of the ball that could potentially pose a challenge or be a matchup that maybe we're not thinking of? As a general fan.
Yeah, and it's not a skilled position player, and it's offensive lineman. It's Ronnie Stanley. We've all seen or heard of him coming out of Notre Dame a couple of years ago. Slipped in the draft a little bit, still went top 10 overall, but he's coming to his own this year. He's played really well, playing at left tackle for them. And I think he presents a challenge to the Vikings' edge rushers, because he's been lights out this year. I think PFF has him ranked in the top 20, which is really good for a player that's so young, especially at a premier position like left tackle. So I think he's going to be a great challenge for Everson Griffin.
And what about you, Miles? I guess, were there any other players that you were thinking of from a Baltimore perspective that we really should keep an eye on, or that you maybe an underrated player that the Vikings should be, you know, looking out for in this game going in?
Mosley, he's one of those guys. Eric Weddle, too. I think they have guys at each level. Not to the, you know, extent the Vikings do, but they got guys at each level that can make plays. So I think that could be a little worrisome for sure. Side note, real quick, Marshawn Lynch just got kicked out of the game.
What? Oh,
yeah. You seeing the replay right now?
Yeah, I'm seeing the replay.
Wow,
look at them Oakland boys really going at it there for a second.
Yeah, but Marshawn. He tried to stop himself, but
yeah, it was too late.
That's why I'm not a fan of refs like jumping in and grabbing players and then expecting those players to like
– Yeah, they're right to go. They can't off the bench. Yeah, you can't do that.
You can't do that either.
He came off the bench. You can't do that.
Okay.
But yeah. But yeah.
All right then.
The Ravens have playmakers on, you know, every level. So I think they definitely have an opportunity to wreak some havoc there against the Vikings.
But is there anyone on their offense that you're worried about?
Oh, no. I mean, I guess if they found if Mike Wallace goes this week, if they find a way to scheme him open downfield, but I just don't see it because I don't see our team giving up any our defense giving up any big plays against Joe Flacco this week. And if they do, it'd be like a busted coverage or a guy slips and falls or something. Honestly, I just don't. There's no way that worries me at all.
Oh, this really is the anti-Flacco pod here for various reasons. You know, overrated, Jason. Overpaid. Yeah. But I'm right there with you. And and Saxy Prince, what about you, man? I guess, are we going to make it a clean sweep with there are no skill position players on the Baltimore Ravens that we are at all worried about heading into this game?
No, I'm not really worried. I don't want to say that completely. I am a little bit worried that this could potentially be a trap game. But I hate saying this, but if we are going to lose a game in this next stretch of games, let's say we drop one and, you know, we win the next four, like this is a game that if we're going to lose, it's going to be this game. AFC North team basically kind of counts as not half a game, but, you know, it counts as less when you finally do all the final calculations and whatnot. But I mean, our defense should be able to hold Baltimore. Offense has always been my concern going into this game. This is why I feel like we need more from a certain position. I don't want to get into it, but I think we need more from
Case Keenum. Go on and get into it, man.
Okay, I'm gonna be honest. We need to see more from Case Keenum. And I mean, he has played admirably as a backup, but like that's what he's been, in my opinion, he's kind of been in this like in between of playing as a very, very high end backup slash fringe starter to looking like a backup quarterback. And I know that we want to rally behind Case Keenum, and I'm fine with doing that. But I mean, we've had a few games now where Case has not looked the greatest, and we need to be honest with ourselves. We saw it in the Lions game. We saw glimpses of it, you know, early in the Pittsburgh game. We saw some of it versus Green Bay, which was, I mean, a little bit more inexcusable because, again, Green Bay's secondary was pretty banged up. So this is probably going to be our best challenge that we'll have, or I mean, our hardest challenge that we'll have over the next, you know, few weeks. So, you know, this kind of speaks to what I've been worried about is like when we face a team that actually has a, you know, defense that we, you know, that we'll have to show out a little bit against. I'm worried about this team not being able to produce.
Well, I think Diggs, too. Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead. Finish up.
No, it's my reason why this could definitely be a game where, you know, special teams could come into play a lot more so than it should be. So, you know, I don't want to see us starting on, you know, on the 7-yard line and having to drive down the field because I just don't think that that's going to be something we're going to be capable of doing very often. This game specifically.
For sure. Well, to it, and I think to your point, with Case Keenum specifically, I think the biggest part about like a backup quarterback is, you know, you get them give them a few games if they need to start, but you don't want them starting, you know, most of the season or, you know, three fourths of the season, 8+ games. So for a guy like Case Keenum, defenses are finally starting to get more tape on him. So they're starting to be able to see more tendencies. They're starting to be able to see more things that, you know, within this offense that, you know, where he's tipping his hand or where they can find those holes that they can, you know, they can take advantage of. So I think that's going to be the hardest thing about moving forward with Case right now. I think Case is fine. I think he's going to continue to play up to a, you know, pretty solid standard. But like you said, I don't think it's a long-term. Obviously, I don't think people expect it to be, but Case isn't a long-term, you know, quarterback solution. So,
I think me and Jason touched on this point a couple pods ago. Excuse me. I think what a lot of people are waiting for is there are a lot of people, you know, because he's such a high volatility guy, they're waiting for that bad game to set in to really start having the
really start to question, should this guy be in our guy moving forward? For me, I don't necessarily want to wait till he starts to play poorly, because again, we have a very good opportunity right now, being at 4-2, taking hold of the division, having Green Bay probably going to take a step back. Lions are still relatively in it. I mean, weirdly enough, even the Bears are still somewhat in it.
Right. Well, we don't really have a choice. We don't really have a choice right now. Case is the guy.
No, I know. I'm not saying right now. Case is going to be your starter for the Ravens. He might likely be the starter for, you know, when we go to London against the Browns. I'm just saying, you know, I think a lot of people are still holding out hope that we're going to get to see that guy that we saw play against Tampa Bay. And well, I think that game was.
Right. Go ahead. I just think what's nice about this offense and kind of what Shermer's done is this offense is really built to, like, not – if there aren't a lot of mistakes to be had and to be made. I'm not saying Case can't still make them, but overall, like, there's always a check down opportunity for the quarterback. Case has the mobility to be able to move around and kind of get out of the pocket if he needs to. So I just don't – I think this – I'm not going to fully compare it, but because I don't – Case doesn't play at that level, but – and there isn't – you know, you don't have the overall run game anymore without Dalvin Cook that you had, or the offensive line, but kind of what Teddy did back in 2015 of just don't make the big mistake. And I still think Case is one of those guys that could still do it, because he kind of has that mentality. He's got that kind of that gunslinger mentality, but I think they're trying to set Case up right now to be the, just don't make that big mistake to lose us the game. But that doesn't mean, and do we need him to fully win us games? And I think that's where we're at the point right now. Without a Bradford, you know, Teddy's back on the mend. Without Dalvin Cook, they're basically telling Case, make the throws that we need you to make, but don't make the crucial mistake.
Yeah, and I think that's I definitely agree with you on that aspect. What worries me is, you know, right now they are definitely playing the whole, you know, Case, yeah, not just game management, make sure you're not making those big mistakes. But we saw some of those mistakes kind of coming to the forefront that didn't necessarily – that actually went our way. I think there's probably like three or four – I can't remember who broke it down – interceptable balls that Case had thrown on, you know, on Sunday. Now,
yeah, and so that was Eric Thompson on Twitter who actually put his game breakdown up there. And just to add a little context to what Yinka is alluding to here, is if you look at the game-by-game grades for Case Keenum, and so this is kind of, you know, some of that conversation that we have a lot, which is, you know, stats and the context that they require versus, you know, tape evaluation, which is, you know, what PFF, you know, does. Even though people don't always love the grades, PFF, you know, is derived from someone watching the game and, you know, they're assigning a plus or minus grade to each play. And so while, you know, Case's overall stats have been kind of up and down since he took over as the starter, I'm kind of leaving that Pittsburgh game out of there because it was terrible, but also they didn't really tell him he was going to start until just, you know, a couple hours before the game. But if you look at his PFF grades since he took over, we'll say it was installed as the full-time starter in week three. You know, he came out of the gate balling, you know, but every week since then, his grade has actually come down a little bit from the week over. And his grade last week was very, very poor. And it showed in his performance. He did throw the one interception. But you know, to Yinka's point, there could have been another two interceptions in that game. And so even though the overall, I guess the traditional stats aren't showing Case Keenum as struggling per se, when you do look at a trend on something that is based from, you know, tape, you can see that, you know, he is already starting to tail off from kind of the honeymoon that we got starting in with that Tampa game. And then it's also the point that that our man, you know, Nate Denny made on Twitter today, which is, you know, and Miles, I guess, kind of made it on this pod as well, is that, you know, Shermer is doing a lot to scheme to Case's strengths and to limit the opportunities for him to make a mistake. But as time goes along and teams get more tape of him in this offense, it's going to be harder to just scheme offense around his limitations as teams start to catch up and figure out what it is we want to do to help Case be successful based on the fact that he isn't, you know, that big, strong-armed quarterback that you'd be looking for.
Sounds exactly like what I just said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you're pretty smart. We should listen to you more often. from us.
Yeah, we really should listen to Miles.
It'll never happen.
We should really listen to Miles more often.
I guess, JR, what are your thoughts? I mean, we've been going back and forth over here talking about quarterbacks like we know something. I guess, what are your thoughts on, you know, Case Keenum, kind of how he's been playing? Because obviously the stats say that, you know, I kind of tongue-in-cheek posted, you know, all those top 10 stats for Case last week. He's fallen off a little bit in PFF grade, but, you know, in the traditional stats, he's still showing very, very well. What are you seeing when you get in there and start to break down the film after every game? And I guess, do you have any concerns about him against this Baltimore defense? And then, you know, kind of as we move forward over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very open about my stance on Case Keenum. I mean, he's the ultimate wild card. You don't really know what you're going to get out of him week in and week out. One week he may show up and play like how he did against the Bucks. Another week he may come and play like he did against the Steelers. Or he might just play average like he did last week against the Packers. But, I mean, we all know what Case Keenum is at this point. He's a high-end backup. I mean, he's capable of making those throws that you want him to make. But sometimes he's going to be inaccurate with them, and sometimes he's going to make them. He's just so up and down. And, I mean, that's why he hasn't been able to stick anywhere as a starter at this point, just because you don't know what you're going to get out of him. As far as scheme-wise, teams are going to start to get more film on him as the season goes along. And, you know, it's going to be very challenging for Pat Shurmur, just because there's only so many games where you can hide his limitations before teams catch on. Defensive coordinators are very smart around the league, and they're going to start to understand what you want to do and how you're scheming around Keenum's limitations. And they're going to adjust to it. And that's what you've seen these past few weeks, where Keenum's performances has kind of declined a little bit. He hasn't been able to make those same throws that we saw out of him earlier on in the season. And we haven't seen those same explosive plays like we were accustomed to seeing early on in the year. So what we're seeing is defensive coordinators starting to catch on with Pat Shurmur is trying to do with Keenum. And what's really going to be interesting to see is how he performs against the Ravens, because, excuse me, they have a really good secondary. And we know we're probably going to be down Diggs this week. If we're being realistic, it doesn't really seem like he's going to play. And I don't think they need to force him to play, just because that groin injury is very tricky and it can linger. So him being down Diggs and now really only having Thielen as that, you know, maybe explosive option down the field that really can stretch the defense, is going to be interesting to see how Shurmur continues to, you know, maximize his limitations.
Yeah, and those are all some really, really great points there. But I guess, you know, going in this game, we got a last couple points that we want to get to here. So, I mean, we've kind of danced around them, and some people have said, you know, some things here, special teams, defense. But JR, you know, rapid fire, we're going to get to this real quick. In your view, Vikings key to victory, what needs to happen for the Vikings to come out of this game with the win?
I think they have to establish the run game in this game, just because, I mean, we know the defense is going to do their part, but they have to be able to give the defense some type of break in this game. And it's going to be one of those grinded out games, one of those true old traditional smash mouth, play good defense, run the ball really well type of games, because it's going to be a defensive battle. I think it's going to be a very low scoring game. And whoever makes the least amount of mistakes or turns the ball over less in this game is going to win. And like I said before, I think it's going to take a defensive touchdown or a special teams touchdown to win this game, just because I think both of the offenses are going to struggle mightily in this game.
And Saxy Prince, rapid fire, man, what are your keys to victory for the Vikings?
I'm going to go with kind of what I said last week. It wasn't quite a touchdown, but, you know, I'm glad that it actually happened. I think Laquan Treadwell is going to be key. I want to see him play angry again. If that's going to be the key to make him to start seeing more of what I saw when I reviewed the tape and wanted him back from Ole Miss, like, let's see more of that. Let's see more of him, you know, just playing angry, playing as that guy that isn't afraid to kind of be that bully on the field. You know, I think Laquan Treadwell is key to this game. Like, I think defense is obviously going to play pretty lights out. This also might be a game where we might need something to happen special teams wise. Maybe Marcus Sherrills gets a touchdown, or, you know, puts us in, you know, pretty close field position or whatever, you know, inside the 20 or something like that. But I would say Laquan and then special teams are my keys.
All right, and Saxy Prince, I'll keep it with you. Give me a bold prediction and a score prediction.
I'm gonna go with what I did last week. I'm gonna go with Laquon Treadwell getting at least one touchdown.
I'm gonna need a different one.
Okay. I mean, I'll say Marcus Sherrill's takes one back. And then score prediction, I just don't feel like it's going to be a high-scoring game, so I'm going to say 19-10 Vikings.
JR, what about you, man?
I'm going to say 17. No, I'm going to go higher. I'm going to go 23-17 Vikings. The Vikings defense forces 5 turnovers.
All right, I like that. I like that. And if you guys are wondering, we haven't just frozen Miles out. Miles, as he said at the beginning of the show, not feeling well. So he has gone off to get himself some NyQuil, call it an evening. So for my bold prediction, I'm going to say the Vikings are getting 3 non-offensive scores in this game. So I'm going to call a return touchdown, a pick 6, and a safety in this game. And from a score prediction, let's just say the offense goes and adds one more touchdown on top of that. So I'm going to go 23-9. Baltimore will get some field goals, but they won't get into the end zone.
Interesting. So
that's it. You know? So upcoming projects. What can we be on the lookout for? I mean, JR almost broke the internet, last week. What you got for us this week, JR?
Yeah, I was going to release a mock draft tomorrow, but I'm kind of second-guessing it right now. I might just hold it until Monday. So be on the lookout for that.
All right. And Saxy Prince, my man, what you got going on for us?
Well, you guys will probably get some more bad form tape because – excuse me, JR had me going back into the gym literally the next night, working back on my form again. I don't think nothing out this week. Maybe I'll do a Ravens breakdown or just like keys to victory for the Vikings and whatnot. I'm hoping I get my wide receiver one back this next Monday. So we'll see how that goes.
You're sending some chicken noodle soup, man.
I will, man. Oh, and in case it's not perfectly clear, I did score 3 touchdowns, 4 technically, but offensively, I did score 3 touchdowns. So that has to mean something.
I mean, it has to mean a little something. A little something. I mean, Byron Leftwich was a high pick, man.
It was. Amen. I'll take y'all out if I'm drafted. I'll probably be drafted like 3 or 4 or something like that.
I'll let you know when the CFL drafts happen, all right?
Yeah, man, you can still get paid in the CFL, so I'm all for it.
I'm going to go ahead and say you make more money than they do now, Yinka.
That's probably true.
Yeah. Well, all right. I guess for me, the only thing I have upcoming is I have some more top secret footage of the Saxy Prince and Miles Gorham out there dominating in flag football. So if I can get some time, I'm going to try to put together a little hype video of our dudes out there dominating in flag football.
Go ahead and let the fans know that's a little bit more deliciousness from the videos that I had sent you. So,
JR, did he just refer to his play as deliciousness? Is that okay?
Yeah,
you heard.
No.
Okay. You heard
okay,
it.
I feel like we got to put that in the tally of the things Prince does that are not okay.
Yeah, he hasn't had a popsicle in a while though, which is good.
Yeah, I guess we'll give him a pass. I think he's washing dishes right now though. So.
Hey man, here's what my mama always used to say: hey, you gotta learn how to do this, because no woman is ever gonna respect you if you don't know how to do it. So, okay. Wash dishes, I cook.
Don't leave no dirty dishes in there. I feel you, bro. I feel you.
Can't be saying delicious.
Just for you, he's about to go to the fridge and get a popsicle too. But just like that, I think we are done for the evening. My name is Jason Brown, here with the full crew again tonight. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast, and y'all have a good night.